We present Gladys Young as Lady Cork, Richard Herndl as Superintendent John Cheviot, June Tobin as Flora Drayton, with Norman Shelley and Austin Trevor, in a new production of Fire Burn, a play by John Kearcross from the novel by John Dixon Carr. Fire Burn.
This is the story of an impossible crime affecting a woman, and of an impossible situation affecting a man.
Taxi!
The woman, for instance, couldn't have been killed in the broad corridor with the fringed lamps. She couldn't have died before the eyes of three witnesses. And yet she did. And it all happened during the period of the last sunburst of the latter-day Regency dandies, fully 8 years before Queen Victoria came to the throne. In short, in the year 1829.
Taxi! Taxi! I say, you there!
Now, that is the voice of Detective Superintendent John Cheviot of the Metropolitan Police. We are very far indeed from that old year of 1829. The good Cheviot is in the Euston Road, and it is an October night sometime in our present 1960s. He is...
Taxi, sir?
Of course I'm looking for a taxi.
Oh, come now, I can't hardly expect conjuring tricks on a foggy night like this, Governor, right? Where to?
Scotland Yard.
Scotland Yard it is, sir. Here we go.
As I was about to say, this detective inspector, John Cheviot, is a man not yet in his middle age, most pleasant-looking and athletic. Nowadays, it is no disgrace to have entered the force by way of Winchester and Trinity College, Cambridge. And provided a man does his work well, as Cheviot does, nobody will object if, by way of a hobby, he rummages much in the ancient police records at Scotland Yard. If he finds himself fascinated by the early history of his own profession and the unsolved crimes of long ago. It so happens, indeed, that the inspector is pondering much on one such mystery of the past as he rides now in his taxicab to Whitehall. A curious case, unsolved for over 130 years, that he has just been reading about in an old book. The case, in short, involving those three unnamed witnesses in that corridor of fringed lamps that I mentioned earlier, and of the woman who died in front of their eyes long before the days when there were detectives to investigate such matters. And as he journeys, John Cheviot's thoughts on that old crime, so sparse in detail, begin to preoccupy him more and more deeply until... But his story tells itself now as the cab draws up with a sudden jerk at his destination.
Oh! What do you mean, pulling up like that?
Can't you? Well, what do you expect on a foggy night like this? Conjuring tricks? It's his new blazing gaslight, that's what. Whoa, go!
Gaslight?
Oh, gonna make all the difference, it were. Tuh. Light up London like a blazing bonfire. And look at it. Can't hardly see me running whip.
Gaslight? And my taxi a hackney coach?
What's the fare, my man?
Shilling.
A shilling? Where did I hire you?
Euston Road. And if you think...
No, 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 it isn't that. You'll have your fare. Where have you brought me?
Oh, where do you think? Where you said, of course.
Scotland Yard.
Oh, that's what you did say, but you meant Great Scotland Yard. You meant Blazing Four Whitehall Place. And there it is, see, among all the mud. Cure! No wonder me old mare slipped.
Here's your money. A florin.
Oh.
It's all I can find in this... these clothes.
Oh, quite the knob, ain't ya? Fancy clobber and everything, now I can see you in the blazing gas. Here.
Well, what, my man?
You come into this place. You and your Scotland Yard and such... Oh, I never thought of it before. Don't tell me you're one of Bobby Peel's new mob.
Peel? Peel?
Oh, blazing police, I'm off. You're a newfangled peeler, you are. A spy, this you might be.
Now, wait. Wait, I say!
Oh, not me, not for any blazing puppy feeler.
What year is it? In heaven's name, man!
Oh, off your nut as well, are you? What year do you think it is? 1829, Cully.
It is impossible. It can't be. And yet that door there, in the gaslight, number 4 Whitehall Place, I recognize it from the old prints, from the days before there was a Scotland Yard, or when it was first beginning, when Peel appointed Mayne and Rowan as its first commissioners. And if I'm honest, I'm compelled towards it, as if on some mission. Past that carriage there with a woman in it, as if she were waiting for someone. Blue eyes, clear golden hair, in a gown of white brocade, and a face almost familiar. Almost.
Mr. Cheviot! Well, Mr. Cheviot, won't you come in for a moment to my carriage?
Madam, I...
John, my dearest. You must come in, only for a moment, John. And if you won't kiss me, then I must kiss you, my love.
Madam, I'm... Isn't your first name Flora, madam?
My dearest Jack, as if you didn't know that.
You're Lady Drayton. You're a widow. You live...
I live, Mr. Cheviot, as you very well know, where I'm waiting to take you home. As always, my love.
No, don't laugh at me, Flora. In heaven's name, don't laugh at me.
My dear, what is it? What's the matter? You seem so strange tonight.
Hold me tight for a moment. I'm out of my senses. I'm a cursed bedlamite.
Jack, my darling.
For a moment, I can't seem to think clearly, Flora. You must help me. I struck my head as I came out of my cab just now. It seems to have changed things. I can't quite...
Dearest, sit still.
I remember some things very clearly. I remember you somehow. That was how I knew your name. I've seen your portrait. In the Victoria and Albert...
The Victoria and Albert, my love? What are you talking about? What can that be, pray?
What?
And as to my portrait, no one has painted it, except that Sir Thomas Lawrence has promised.
I'm sorry, forgive me. It's part of my dream, this strange madness.
Nonsense, of course you aren't mad. You simply cannot recollect yourself for an instant.
Myself? But what self, Flora? Who am I?
You are John Cheviot, gentleman, and my... my very dear, dear friend. Will you not kiss me again, Jack? Will that not help?
No, wait. And I have come here
to... You have come here to see Mr. Richard Mayne and Colonel Charles Rowan. And if you'll be mad at all, John Cheviot, it's because you have some wild notion to become superintendent of their central company, or central division, whatever name they give it in this new silly fancy of Mr. Peel's for a police force. And I think that I must have been mad myself to come to speed you on your foolish errantry when I find you in this mood. Surely a little knock on the head in a hackney.
No, Flora, it was more than that. Much more. Someday I may be able to tell you. You before all, somehow. Whoever you are.
Whoever I am.
But not now. No. Now, I suddenly accept.
Accept?
Everything, or almost everything. Including the fact that I had a dream once, to be in like this at the beginning, to amaze them all in there by solving some mystery that they couldn't fathom with all that I've learned since, with fingerprints or ballistics.
John, what words?
No, forgive me again, Flora. It's only my foolish tongue. And there is one thing else that I accept, too, now.
What, my dear?
That I love you, Flora. And nobody knows how long I've loved you. Ask me nothing else. I know none of the answers myself. But now I will kiss you, truly, as I should have done at the beginning. And will you wait for me until I come out from there to help me?
Oh, always, John. Always, always, my love.
Mr. Cheviot to see Mr. Mayne and Colonel Rowan.
Good evening, gentlemen. I have read a good deal about you both.
Ah, how do you do, Mr. Cheviot? This is Mr. Mayne, do you see, my fellow commissioner. I'm Charles Rowan.
Honored, Mr. Mayne.
The pleasure is mine, sir. Will you be seated? Oh, this other gentleman is Mr. Henley. Mr. Alan Henley, our chief clerk and secretary.
Your servant, Mr. Cheviot.
How do you do?
You must forgive Henley for not rising, sir. An old leg wound from Waterloo. Now then, speaking for myself, do you see, I'm sort of gratified by this application of yours. This your first visit to Scotland Yard, I take it?
I think I could say so, Colonel.
Quite, quite. So we'll consider your qualifications, eh?
Wait a bit, Rowan. For my part, now that I see Mr. Cheviot in person, I'm not so sure that I approve the idea of his appointment at all.
Sir?
Oh, forgive me, Mr. Cheviot. What I mean, Rowan, is that this gentleman is too plainly a gentleman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayne. You are very good.
Whatever this new police force of ours may someday become, Mr. Cheviot, the fact is that at the moment its members are as rough as men are made, sir. Peel doesn't want gentlemen. Not for our work.
And is there no other work, Mr. Mayne?
Such as?
The solving of crimes. Crimes committed by a person or persons unknown. Thievery, housebreaking, even murder.
Oh, come, sir. These things are in the province of the Bow Street runners.
Who are frequently corrupt, as I am told. Oh, yes, gentlemen. Bow Street can always produce a victim to be hanged. But how often do you hang the right man?
Damn seldom. Ecod, you're right, Mr. Cheviot. I've been thinking along these very lines myself lately. In good time, a dozen years or so, we'll abolish the runners altogether. We'll create a new force of our own, and we'll call it the Detective Police. Eh? Eh?
Excellent, Colonel. And why shouldn't I become its first member? And begin those services now.
Damn me, why not? Eh, Maine? We're living in a new age, ain't we? Steam, railways, power looms for the mills.
No doubt, Ron. No doubt at all. But there is still one point to some mystery, perhaps.
One, sir.
Shall we consider Mr. Cheviot's record, Colonel? Henley, Mr. Cheviot's portfolio, if you will.
I have it ready, sir.
Thank you. Will you read them?
Cheviot John, a gentleman of independent means, lives in chambers at Albany, moves in the Beaumont. Noted as pistol shot, wrestler, and single stick player. His private affairs. These are no concern of ours, of course.
On the contrary, Colonel, I beg you to continue.
You insist?
I request.
Very well. He's at times a heavy gambler and somewhat wild and strange in his manner. He's no friend to temperance societies, although he's never observable as being drunk. His friendship with Lady Drayton, widow of Sir Arthur, is too well known, perhaps.
Quite so. And as you say, it's no concern of ours. My main point has been made.
And it is, Mr. Mayne?
Sir, you have applied for the post of superintendent at the central division of our newly formed police force. You are, we hear, of considerable independent means. But your emolument with us would only be $200 a year. You'd be on duty 12 hours a day. Your work would be hard, dangerous, even bloody. Mr. Cheviot, why do you want this post?
Because, sir, at least I think because of what I have already told you. Because I believe, indeed, that the duties of the new police comprise more than suppressing brawls or hailing away drunkards or disturbers of the peace. Because I believe that I could be a detective, in Colonel Rowan's word. I believe that by certain methods of my own that are as yet unknown, if you are to confront me with a crime which you believe to be impossible of solution...
I beg pardon, Colonel Rowan. A letter for you, sir, personal and by hand.
Eh? Oh, yes, Billings. Excuse me, gentlemen.
A pinch of snuff, Mr. Cheviot?
No, thank you, Mr. Mayne.
You were saying?
I was only trying to assure you that...
Damnation!
I beg your pardon, Rowan.
Read that, Mayne. Damn it, we'll have to postpone our meeting with you till later, Cheviot. Somebody's been stealing bird seed from Lady Cork again.
Bird seed?
Aye, sir, bird seed.
Well, bird seed. So they have. An interesting letter, Ron. The old lady seems quite angry. But you know, it gives me an idea.
How the deuce do you mean, Mayne?
Well, simply that since our good friend Cheviot fancies his abilities as a detective policeman, here surely is his opportunity.
By Jove!
My dear Mr. Mayne, do you wish me to investigate this abominable crime, birdseed?
Do you find the matter so very amusing, sir?
Ecod, you've got the very notion, Mayne. And if it strikes you as funny, Mr. Cheviot, you don't know Lady Cork, do you?
No, sir.
If she's a day, she's 80 and more, and she has crotchets, sir, and she's got the ear of the Prime Minister himself, the Duke, sir.
Wellington?
Who else, Stabby? The old lady could stir up blue murder for us over this. The Duke don't like us much in any case.
Yet, where exactly does the famous bird seed enter?
Well, I won't deny that Milady of Cork is a mite eccentric. She keeps birds, Cheviot, parrots and so forth, dozens of them in cages. And there's the famous macaw that'll clip you a cigar as soon as look at you. Aye, and smoke it too, Ecod. And for the second time in a week, somebody's stolen the bird seed from the containers at the sides of some of these deuced cages of hers. At the old Sparks flaming and demands that we do something.
Well, Mr. Cheviot?
Gentlemen, I beg your pardons. Of course I must accept the test. If I'm honest, I've been given far more nonsensical assignments even than this in my time. And some of them have led to... well, to other things.
Good, good, Cheviot. Henley, you'd best write a note of authority for Mr. Mayne and me to sign.
Very good, sir.
In fact, when you've done it, you'd best go to Lady Cox yourself as well. Take shorthand notes and such when you interview the old bird, Cheviot. I mean the Countess, not the macaw, eh?
Yes, quite.
Damn it. We've got to act at once on this or I smell trouble. And if I remember rightly, my lady's giving a ball tonight for some of the beau monde. You'd best attend it, Cheviot.
Can I? Without invitation?
The Countess's house in New Burlington Street is sometimes known as Liberty Hall, Mr. Cheviot. And besides...
Well, sir?
I rather fancy that I glimpsed my Lady Flora Drayton's carriage at the door outside just before your slightly late arrival this evening. And it's there still, I perceive. She almost certainly will be welcome at Lady Cork's, their devoted friends. And you could accompany her? It would be no unusual spectacle, perhaps.
Indeed, it seems that it would not, Mr. Mayne.
The letter of authority, Colonel. Will you and Mr. Mayne sign it?
Yes. The very thing, Henley. And do you ride on in front, do you see, prepare the way for Mr. Cheviot at the house? Can you manage to hobble out with that old nag of yours in the yard?
Thank you, sir, admirably. Shall we go then, Mr. Cheviot?
This moment. Gentlemen, I am your humble servant. You may call me, if you will, and though it can mean nothing to you, Sherlock Holmes. For I shall do all within my mortal power to solve the mystery of the missing bird seed.
And so it was that Detective Superintendent John Cheviot of Scotland Yard found himself involved in a mystery of crime almost 100 years before he fancied that he'd been born. Yet, which was the real John Cheviot? This one garbed in strange clothes and remembering the early 1960s as he rode to Lady Cork's with Flora Drayton in the 1820s?
I must be careful. I must show no surprise. I nearly gave myself away more than once with Mayne and Rowan. No Nelson Monument out there in the square yet. No National Gallery. I must accept such things without comment. And Flora, whom I plainly love and who plainly loves me, in some way she holds the key to this shutting in to another century. Somehow. Somehow I know her. She seems so right for me. And yet...
Or is it this other John Cheviot, the sporting blade of the 1820s, in the carriage with Flora, but in the flesh, as the story tells itself again?
Well, Mr. Cheviot, and did you obtain this odious and inferior position for which you so horribly long?
Inferior?
Well, is it not
so? If I obtained the position at all, my dear...
Then you didn't. Oh, Jack, I'm so glad. No gentleman should ever work, you know. And yet, how could they dare to turn you down?
But they haven't, my love. Not yet, at least. I'm being given a test, and that is why you and I are going to Lady Cork's ball.
I might have known that it wasn't only for pleasure. I guessed it the moment I saw that man coming out of Scotland Yard with you, with a dispatch box and the big black stick.
That, my dear Flora, was Mr. Alan Henley, chief clerk and secretary to commissioners for police. Handsome, didn't you think, for his age? A lingering trace of the ladies' man?
No clerk is ever handsome.
Well, at any rate, I have a feeling he might be useful to me. I like the fellow. And he hardly spoke back there. There's a kind of gruff charm in him. A good companion for an investigation, I'd say.
And what investigation, pray?
Tell me first about Lady Cork. The Countess of Cork and Orrery in the full title, if I remember. I read about her in my Boswell.
Oh, they never dare to mention it. Or she'll tell you 100 times a day what dull old Dr. Johnson said to her when she was a girl. As far as Maria Cork is concerned, we're still in the 18th century. La, you should hear her speak.
And Miss Margaret Renfrew?
Miss Renfrew? Don't you know her either, Jack?
Should I?
Are you sure you don't?
My dear girl, why should I ask otherwise? All I know is that as we parted at Scotland Yard back there, the good Alan Henley whispered to me, "Look very sharp when you talk to Lady Cork, Mr. Cheviot." Aye, and to Miss Margaret Renfrew, too. That is, if you do talk to her, said he.
Margaret Renfrew is Maria Cork's companion. She... Jack, do you swear to me that you don't know her?
But my dearest Flora...
Hold me tightly, Jack. You must bear with me if I grow frightened sometimes.
Frightened?
I know. I'm almost certain that you've been faithful to me. I am certain. But sometimes, when I look at the glass...
Flora.
No, please, my dear. I'm not so young. I'm 31, Jack.
And am I not, 38?
It's different for a man. And you did have such a reputation, sweetheart.
And what has this to do with Miss Margaret Renfrew?
They say... I've heard it whispered that you... You might have met her, Jack, and that being what she is...
Give me your hand, Flora. I vow to you that, to my knowledge, I have never met this woman in my life. Not in either life.
Either life?
Hmm? Oh, nothing. What do you mean when you say, being what she is?
Oh, I don't know. Only something about her. Perhaps it was what your Mr. Henley meant, too. Something very strange, very dark, hidden, very passionate in a secret way. Do you know Edmund Kean, the actor?
I've heard of him.
He's finished now, of course, the drink and worse. A strange little man, hardly more than a dwarf. But in his great days he had such power. He was a lion.
Well, and Miss Renfrew?
No one will receive Mr. Kean in society these days because of his terrible drinking. No one but Maria Cork. And one night, about a month or so ago, when I was there too, Peg Renfrew came into the room. And Kean gave a start, like the man in the play seeing the ghost. And he stared at her so. And he said, in a strange, strange voice, he said...
Well, what, my dear?
Fire burn and cauldron bubble. I don't know why, Jack, but there was a kind of silence fell. As if somehow Mr. Kean had seen something, had foreseen something about her, Margaret Renfrew.
Firebird. All this and birdseed.
Birdseed?
Hmm? It's why we're going to Lady Cork's at all, Flora. Come, I'll tell you all about it. We must be almost there. And perhaps you can help me. I've even half a theory already. I expect you know about Milady's famous parrots. Well, it seems...
Thank you, Martin. No, only take my cloak. Please, I'll keep my muff.
As you say, milady. Your hat, sir?
Thank you. I'm not here only for the ball, my man. Be good enough to take me to Lady Cork immediately.
Well, I'm afraid, sir, there's a lady...
I said, take me to Lady Cork. I have urgent business with her. At her own request.
Very good, sir. I will inquire.
Wait, Jack. There's your precious Miss Renfrew now, coming down the stairs with that odious man of yours with a knob stick.
Good evening, Mr. Cheviot. It's all right, Martin. Her ladyship expects this gentleman. I shall attend him.
Miss Renfrew?
That is my name, sir. Greetings, Lady Drayton. I know you well by reputation, Mr. Cheviot, and your friend here has already told us to expect you as Colonel Round's representative. We have his note of authority.
Excellent, Henley. You managed it, then.
I'm faster than you may think, Mr. Cheviot. I've been able to make all arrangements for an interview very satisfactorily, I think.
Lady Cork is in her retiring room upstairs. Mr. Cheviot, will you follow me?
Thank you, Flora.
Oh, if you will, I suppose.
Tush, it seems uncommonly noisy tonight, Miss Renfrew.
No, there aren't so very many yet in the upstairs ballroom, Lady Drayton. Most of the din is from the anteroom along there. Some of the younger bloods have just come in.
And are just coming out, too, from the looks of it. Such a smell of foul tobacco. Why do men smoke?
And suddenly, you see, the mortal gave me back McGinnis, and she says, Jack. Jack Cheviot again. I say, look who's here, you men. Jack, my dear good fellow.
And Flora.
Ready. Lana, here's a pleasure.
All mine, Flora. Positively delighted, by Jove. Must be a fortnight at least, by Jove, since I saw either of you. Coming up to dance, Jack?
Not quite at the moment, Freddy. The
really,
fact is that I
trust that one can reach the ballroom sometime. If people will be good enough to avoid crowding the stairs.
I beg your pardon?
I think you heard me, fellow. Out of my way.
And if I choose not to?
Jack.
Then I've no alternative but to push you. Hmm?
And if I prefer to push you instead, sir, so... Oh.
Look out, Hogbinny. Had you there, eh?
What do you mean by that, fellow? By heaven, I don't like your look.
Your own is hardly noteworthy, sir, and what I meant by that was that I wasn't particularly taken by your manner, either.
Who are you? You, sir!
Miss Renshrew, I apologize on this gentleman's behalf. Will you lead the way again?
Damn it, I spoke to you.
I, however, had quite finished speaking to you. My arm, Lady Drayton.
By heaven! By heaven!
And in glory's name, keep your temper. Wouldn't call out Jack Cheviot, would you? He's the best shot in town.
Cheviot, is it? Very well. I'll remember Cheviot. By the Lord, I'll remember.
Pray do, if your meager wits permit it. Mr. Henley, you can set down that admirable stick of yours. Our impulsive friend's drinking companions have decided to hold him back. There will be no riot. Come, ladies.
Oh, you're an ass. Oh,
what hutters they are. What little amusement they provide. Give me an older man with experience. I apologize sincerely, Mr. Cheviot. And to you too, Mr. Henley, is it?
Henley, ma'am. And I am always well provided for any emergencies with my faithful stout Blackthorn.
In any case, the fault was all mine, Miss Renfrew, in Lady Cork's house. You are related to Lady Cork?
Related? No, sir. I am only the daughter of one of her old friends. I'm merely a courtesy poor relation, sir. I exist by Lady Cork's bounty. Will you come this way now? Along the corridor. It is just past the ballroom here.
Wait, please. I want a private word with Mr. Cheviot first.
As you wish, Lady Drayton. Do you and I go in advance then, Mr. Henley? No doubt Mr. Cheviot will follow as soon as he can.
Instantly, Miss Renfrew.
After you, ma'am.
My dear Flora, don't you think that was really rather rude?
Jack, I'm sorry. I don't want to come in with you. I'm in no mood tonight for Maria Cork. But I had to warn you, that scene on the stairs just now.
Well?
Don't quarrel with Captain Hogman. Oh, pray don't, Jack.
I gathered that that was his name, was a captain. He should certainly know better.
Don't vex or trifle with him. He's notorious for not playing fair. He'll hurt you. Somehow he'll hurt you. If he does call you out...
Then I shall trust to look after myself. Was that all you wanted to say, Flora? Remember, I'm on duty.
Oh, duty. Oh, this odious work of yours. Why are you so strange tonight, Jack? So cold. You weren't even very cordial to poor Freddy Debit.
The young man who'd had too much claret?
You know well enough. And Freddy admires you so. That's why I like him. I know he's very foolish and such a gossip with all his tales.
What tales?
Only vaporings. About thieves, since you're so concerned with this wretched bird scene.
Thieves? What, Flora? Tell me.
Oh, that somebody's been stealing Maria Cork's jewellery or some such. All nonsense.
Is it indeed? Ha! That theory of mine may have something in it after all. Flora, I must go in. Wait for me here, my dear, in the corridor. Look, there's a chair over there, and my lady's entrancing fringe lamps will light you at your loveliest when I come out.
Oh, Jeff. And then shall we dance?
Yes. Then we shall dance. Now, forgive me.
Oh, blood. So you've condescended to come in at last, young man.
Your pardon, Lady Cork. I fear I was detained a little.
And we know how, too, eh, Peg?
I'm sure, Aunt Maria, that Lady Drayton...
Hold your tongue, girl. You ain't sure of anything. I'll see Flo Drayton later. So you're George Cheviot's son...
Am I, madam?
What, don't you know? God, don't
you? Oh, I beg your pardon again, my lady. A manner of speaking.
Do a square one. Nay, don't start, George Cheviot's son. 'Tis only me famous macaw. He won't harm you. He's tied at the leg, you see, on that perch of his.
He's certainly a singularly handsome creature.
Nonsense, he's as ugly as sin, you know it, and so am I. Would you like to see him at his famous trick? If you're the cigar handler.
Thank you, madam. I have heard of his accomplishments. Some other time, perhaps, when I am not on duty.
Duty? Tush, what's duty, George Cheviot's son?
I think Mr. Cheviot means his work with the new police, Aunt Maria. Colonel Round's letter...
Because you're right, Peg Renfrew. Except I thought I told you to hold your tongue, eh? And the other fellow, too, of course. The one with the gammy leg, like myself.
All the more your humble servant, milady.
Compliments, eh? From clerks. Nay, don't look so furious at him, Peg. That deuced pride of yours. The times are changed, you see. 'Tis only clerks that do give compliments nowadays. I never noticed one from George Cheviot's boy. Huh?
Madam, I did not think one needed. You are so fine a one to yourself.
Damn it. That's the very thing, lad. The old spirit ain't died yet after all, eh? You might almost have known old Sam Johnson himself, boy.
I fear that he was just a little before my time, milady.
Oh, so he was. So he was, of course. So he was. Well, you'd best sit down. Let's on with it. What's your dispatch case open for, Mr. Lamefeller?
If I may, my lady, to take some notes of our interview in shorthand.
What shorthand is it? Why, sir?
It will be my duty, ma'am, to prepare a report for the Joint Commissioners on anything connected with this curious crime that I may discover.
Reports? Tush, in it. Deuce newfangled stuff on a trifling matter like this.
It may not, ma'am, be quite as trifling as you fancy.
What do you mean, boy?
I mean that I believe that rather more has gone missing from this house of yours than simple bird seed, Lady Cork. And I believe you know it.
Damn it, sir!
Aunt Maria!
You're this hired girl, and you there with a stick. Stop taking your deuce notes, do you hear me?
I'm afraid that I must insist, my lady. Continue with your work, Henry.
Yes, sir.
After all, ma'am, it was you yourself who insisted somewhat angrily on this inquiry over your missing jewels.
How did you know? Odd's blood, how did you know, boy? Are you a wizard?
No, ma'am. A humble student of psychology.
What the deuce is that, pray?
I meant, Lady Cork, that it seems to me a woman's very natural instinct to hide things of value. Especially a woman like you, and to hide them close at hand if she thinks them in danger. The seed containers of your many parrot cages do infinite credit to your wit, my lady.
My wit?
Who would ever suspect such a hiding place? Or if they did suspect, wouldn't the detaching of the containers at night set up a flurry of alarm? Do I speak the truth, ma'am?
Aye, you do. You are a wizard. Damn me, I could maybe have stood it when they rifled my strong box of the gewgaws I never cared for, but when it came to the other things...
The other things?
There was a trinket of my husband's that they took. The first gift I ever had from him, a diamond and ruby brooch, you see, in the shape of a ship. I and a little ring from another man. And him dead these 60 years.
I'm deeply sorry, my lady. Henley, you may omit these more personal details.
I've done that already, Mr. Cheviot.
And so you hid your more important trinkets in the seed containers, ma'am.
Aye, and they still went. Even in my very bedroom with the cages there, I tell you, it's near broke my heart, boy.
Aunt Maria, they'll be found. I know they will.
Well, they go.
I'm certain of it now that Mr. Cheviot and Mr. Henley are both here. But it is nearly midnight, Aunt. Your guests will be ready for supper. Have I your leave to go to prepare?
Aye, you'd better, Peg. And you'd best go through by my bedroom and see all's tidy. Then you can slip through the other door to the corridor and down that way. I don't want that damn double door open yet. I ain't in any mood for the deuce music.
I understand, Aunt Maria. Will you forgive me, gentlemen?
You're seven, ma'am. Lady Cork, I can't and won't distress you any more than I can help. But why didn't you say the jewels had been stolen? Why conceal it?
And have them all laugh at me again the way they always do, because I'm old and strange in my ways. Do you think that Charlie Rowan would have understood about me hiding places the way you do, boy?
If I may presume, Mr. Cheviot, I think that Lady Cork is right.
I reckon that if you found the knave that took the seed, the rest would follow.
Will you answer me one more question, and then we shall leave you?
Well, if I can.
At one further guess, I would suppose that the thief is someone close at hand, my lady. In this very house with you. Have you any notion whom?
No, sir.
Are you certain, ma'am? On your honor?
Damn me, I said no, sir. I won't swear on any honor. How much do you think I've left at my age to a life like mine? But I'll tell you one thing, and it galls me more than any. I've heard it whispered that that little brooch of mine, like the ship, has been pledged, sir. And mayhap the other things, too, at Vulcan's.
Vulcan?
Aye, sir, Vulcan's of all places. A brooch of mine at Vulcan's. Ah, now go, the pair of you. Close up your dispatch desk, Mr. Lamefellow. I've had enough. I'm tired of it all.
My humblest apologies, madam. You've been very good. We shall do everything we can.
Oh, I dare say, I dare say. Well, at least I like you, boy. I can't say I blame Flo Drayton after all. But off with you now. Off with you.
The music, ma'am, will it irk you as we go through the door?
Damn it, you think I want clerks rampaging through my bedroom t'other way? Even clerks that do pay compliments? Now, off with you, I say.
Good night, Lady Cork. And thank you. Well, well, Henry.
Well, well, indeed, Mr. Cheviot. Remarkable personage, the Countess.
Really? Look.
What's her?
Lady Drayton, the way she's standing there, in the corridor with her back to us.
So she is. She looks very strange, sir.
Hmm?
So stiff, somehow.
Oh, I dare say. Because I was so long. I'll set it right. You know, Henley, I think I want another word with Miss Margaret Renfrew.
Do you, sir?
I mean that I wouldn't be surprised if she knows something. Did you see the way she looked at you when you were taking your notes in there? At both of us?
Come to think of it, I did, sir. Yes, she's a dark one, that. Dark and secret, I'd say.
I had the notion more than once that she was about to say something, to tell us something.
Wait, sir. There she is. Look, coming out of that door beyond Lady Drayton. Look.
So it is. By the Lord, I'll get her now before she goes downstairs.
No! Miss Re-
Good God!
Jack.
Stand back, Flora.
Jack.
Back! What happened, sir? In heaven's name.
She fell. She seemed to fall suddenly. Margaret Renfrew, she crumpled and fell.
She's dead.
Dead?
Shot through the back.
But it isn't possible, Mr. Cheviot. There was no sound of a gun.
Confound it, man. Do you think I don't know a bullet wound when I see one? Look at it, there, under her left shoulder blade. I tell you that... Henley?
What, sir?
The door of the ballroom is open a little. Quickly close it. Lock it. There's a key in the lock there. I don't want that mob swarming over us.
Yes, sir.
Flora. Flora. In heaven's name. Give me that pistol.
Jack.
Give me that pistol, I say. Do you think I didn't see it as I passed you, hidden in your muff? Give it to me.
Jack, I didn't do it. I swear I didn't.
Well, it's locked, sir. Mr. Cheviot, I still say it can't be possible. Who did this, sir? There was nobody here but us three.
But there must have been, Henley. Do you think a woman could fall dead from a bullet without anybody firing it?
But the noise, sir, and the smoke, the smell of powder. And where's the gun?
Damnation, man, do you think I know?
It must have been through the door, Jack, the ballroom.
Do you suppose I haven't thought of that? But look, look where the wound is. It could never have been made from that angle. She'd have been shot in the side instead of in the back. And the door she came through is impossible, too, for the same reason. And the only other door...
Behind us, sir. Where you and me were standing. Lady Cork's room.
And you must have noticed as well as I have that that door opens with a loud click, Henley. We'd have heard it. And the shot. I tell you that we...
Tell me, what's the meaning of this? What's all this chattering out here? Can't you... Peg Renfrew.
I'm afraid that she's dead, Lady Cork. Shot in the back.
Mariah.
What's blood? Peg Renfrew. Shot. Who did it, then? A lover?
Her lover, ma'am. She had a lover.
Ah, don't tell me, to be sure she had.
And his name?
How should I know? The jade was too close-mouthed. But couldn't you see it in her eyes, George Cheviot's son?
I certainly saw something in her eyes.
Ah, pride and shame, and both at the same time. Tetchy and savage for fear somebody would read it in her face.
Lady Cork, a monstrous crime has been committed almost before our eyes. As an officer of the police, I must take charge. Will you assist me?
Well, boy...
I took the liberty of locking the ballroom door there, but at any moment your guests will be clamoring for supper. Will you go in and restrain them somehow? Make some excuse. I must have them held there until I can remove the body.
And where will you take her, pray?
Through there. The door she came out of.
My poor bedroom.
With your permission, I'll get Mr. Henley to send up one of your footmen to help me as he goes for the surgeon.
The surgeon, sir?
Well, of course, Henley, at once.
But the lady's dead, Mr. Cheviot. What use is a surgeon?
Confound it! We must get out the bullet, man. We must find what direction it was fired from. It's vital! Tell the footman to give me 3 minutes and then come up. And let no one up the staircase in the interval. Hurry, man.
Yes, sir. At once.
Will you do what I ask, Lady Cork?
Tell me, I said I like you, George Cheviot's son, though the deuce knows why. I suppose I must, eh?
I would be obliged, ma'am. And will you tell me something before you go?
Well?
Am I correct in assuming that it was Margaret Renfrew who stole your jewelry, Lady Cork?
Mr. Cheviot, I told you already that I don't know anything at all. And if you want me to hold back that mob of ruffians in there, I'd best go in this minute. Ah, damn witchcraft, all of it.
Oh, Jack.
Why? Why, my love?
I didn't, Jack. I told you. I swear
but
I didn't.
But the pistol, this pistol,
look
Flora.
Look at my muff, Jack. Look at it. Do you think that if I'd fired through it, it wouldn't have been torn, burnt?
Yes, but where did the damn awful thing come from? You didn't have it in the carriage.
I found it.
You found it?
Not 5 minutes ago while I was waiting for you in the corridor here. It was beneath that table there, pushed back, half out of sight. My eye suddenly caught it, and I picked it up.
But why? Why, my dear?
Because I recognize it. It's my own. Look there on the little plaque in the hilt. A.D. It was my husband's. We found it among his things after he died.
Then how did it get into this house, Flora?
That woman there, a month ago, Margaret Renfrew, when there were all the burglary scares in this part of town, she came to ask if Maria Cork could borrow it to protect herself, and I gave it to her.
And you have never seen it since?
Not till this moment. It was just lying there. I was going to pick it up, but just then Freddie Debit and those others came up the stairs, that terrible Captain Hogg.
Did they see you?
No, I don't think so. They'd had more to drink. They went straight on into the ballroom.
So they're in there. Yes, and then, Flora?
And then I did pick it up. And I was standing looking at it in the lamplight, not understanding, Jack. And then I heard the door of Maria's room, and you and that lame man came out. I heard you muttering together, and you said, I wouldn't be surprised if she knows something, and I thought you meant me.
Flora.
I was going to turn round and look at you, and just then she came out of the bedroom, Margaret Renfrew. And I felt a wind past my arms, somehow a sharp breath almost. And she fell. And I hid the pistol in my muff.
And made me commit the gravest sin I could, at the beginning of my whole career. Because I saw you, and I suppressed the evidence, and I must go on suppressing it. Why did you hide it like that, Flora? Why, if you had nothing to fear?
Because it was still bound to be all my fault. When my husband was alive, everything was my fault, everything. And since he's dead, it's been worse. I can't do anything, not in this whole world, without people thinking ill of me. Well, look how they talk about us. And now even you have turned against me.
No, Flora, that isn't true.
It is true. That pistol had been fired already when I picked it up. I could tell that by the broken cartridge. And yet you still believe that it was me, or you would never question me like
Flora,
this.
Flora, I had to question you. I have my duty to do.
I hate your duty. I hate everything that has to do with this damnable work of yours. You've changed, Jack, terribly. You frightened me all night. And Maria Cork spoke the truth. There is witchcraft in it somewhere. I'm going home. I never want to see you again. Never.
Fire burns. And cauldron bubble.
So, the point of return, or of no return? It's at least certain that from this time forward, John Cheviot of the Metropolitan Police found the images from both his lives overlapping less and less frequently. Truly, he still remembered much from his old days, the 1960s, but he remembered with an increasing vagueness.
I had a flat, I remember. Somewhere in Baker Street. Or near Baker Street. I had a car. But what make? And what almost is a car? Could I describe it? To Lady Cork or to Flora? This bullet that I hold. This clear, round, leaden ball from Margaret Renfrew's heart. What did I read and study once in those other times of firearms and ballistics? What help is it all now? And as I do think of Flora, as I can never help but think of her, was I married in those other times? And if I was, and I go back someday.
Thus he pondered as he sat to breakfast in a Bond Street coffee room on the morning of October the 30th, 1829, with the long night of mystery over at last. His report had been written and sent to the Joint Commissioners, and again, for his sins, he had suppressed the evidence of Flora Drayton's hidden pistol because, he told himself, he believed in her innocence and that her story was true. And yet, for a man of his past or future record to have suppressed evidence at all.
Yes, there you are, Jack. I guess I'd find you in the old morning haunt.
Hmm? Oh, Debit.
What's wrong with the usual Freddy, eh? Where you always call a fellow.
Oh, I'm sorry, Freddy. I was thinking.
Trouble is, you know, you're taking this confounded investigation of yours too serious. You knocked me all of a heap the way you questioned it all last night at Lady C's. Can a fellow sit down with a new pila?
Hmm? Of course.
The difficulty was that only some of you let yourselves be questioned. The rest just walked out like that friend of yours, Hogben.
No, Hogben ain't no friend of mine, Jack. No, no. He's too deuced insolent for my liking.
Breakfast, sir?
Oh, no, thanks, no. Pint of claret and a biscuit.
Very good, sir.
Deuced if I could face a dish of eggs like you, Jack. Not after a night like last.
Freddy, will you tell me something? Even if you think I ought to know the answer already.
Of course. Getting used to your new rum ways these times.
What is Vulcans?
Vulcans?
Hmm.
Vulcans? Oh, Gad, Jack, you must know that. You, above all people.
No, remember the way I asked you, Freddy. I have a reason. Come on now. Vulcans.
Well, the famous gaming house, don't you know, round in St. James.
Oh, I see. Gaming house.
Really fairly inside.
Eh?
A roulette, you know.
And may one pledge things there?
Gad, where do you think the best gold watch is, eh? Oh, no, old Vulcan's got a full pawnbroker's license, of course. What else do you expect a fellow to do when he runs out of cash at the table?
And Vulcan himself, if there is such a one.
Oh, juice, Jack, this is going too far. I've seen you talking to him yourself a dozen times. Big fellow, tries to dress like a gentleman. Mistresses all over the place. In spite of his ugliness and that glass eye of his.
Thank you, Freddy.
Your claret, sir.
Oh, thank you. Dammy, I need it.
Now, one thing else, Freddy. I understand that you've been spreading gossip about someone stealing Lady Cork's jewels.
Confound it, Jack.
Well, haven't you?
Well, no more than anyone else had. Gad, you talk as if I invented the rumour. All the fellas have been talking about it, Hogben and such.
I see. And have Hogben and such any views, I wonder, on another rumour that I've heard?
What?
That Miss Margaret Renfrew, the late Miss Margaret Renfrew, had a secret lover.
Now, look here, Jack.
Had she, Freddy?
Well, all the fellows said so, certainly.
Who is he?
Danny, it's just awkward, Jack.
Why?
Well, nobody rightly knows at all, you see, but some of them used to say that it was, well, you see.
And that's a third rumour that I've heard before, only this one can be scotched. I can tell you now, I can almost swear to you, that until last night, and to the best of my knowledge, I had never set eyes on Margaret Renfrew in my life.
Well, that's exactly what I've always said myself. Confounded, she was never your sort. Not after Flo Drayton. No, you were always too discriminating, Jack. There was something damnable about Peg Renfrew. Something repulsive for all those looks of hers. Did you ever hear what Ned Keane said when he looked at her? The actor fella?
Fire burn.
Yeah, the very thing. And he was right, you know. She was a kind of witch. I wouldn't have touched her myself with a barge pole. No, no. It needed somebody pretty dark himself. Whoever he was. Somebody like...
Your pardon, gentlemen. Your name, sir, I believe, is Cheviot.
Who the devil are you?
You may not be surprised when I tell you that I am here on behalf of my friend, Captain Hogben of the 1st Foot Guards. I myself am Lieutenant Wentworth of the 2nd Foot. There is my card.
And can Captain Hogben not speak for himself instead of standing there beside you like a ramrod?
Damn you, Cheviot. You must be aware, sir, that it is not the custom. There is a certain code in these matters. Captain Hogben begs me to express his opinion that your behavior last night was of such an insulting kind as no gentleman can endure from another gentleman.
What other gentleman? Damn it, the fellow's no more than a peeler. He's lucky I consent to call him out at all.
In heaven's name, Hogben. I told you last night Jack Cheviot's the best shot in London.
I take leave to doubt that, Mr. Debbitt. You may not have seen myself shoot of late.
I wonder if perhaps I have, Captain Hogben.
What do you mean, sir?
Gentlemen, the code. Well, Mr. Cheviot?
I take the utmost pleasure in accepting Lieutenant Wentworth on one condition.
Condition?
You must know Manton's famous shooting gallery in Davies Street. I've certainly heard of it myself. Very well. Before our formal meeting in the field, Captain Hogben and I shall try our hands against each other there. 6 shots each at the bullseyes for any wager that he cares to name.
What? 2 principals to practice together before a meeting? But the code...
So the deuce with the code, Wentworth. Did you say any wager, Cheviot?
I did, Hogben.
1,000 guineas?
Done.
And what odds do you give?
All odds. If you outshoot me at Manton's gallery, say at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, I pay you 1,000 guineas on the spot. And we meet later in the field of death. If I outshoot you...
Well, then?
On your word as a British officer, Captain Hogben, you shall tell me all you know about the late Margaret Renfrew and how she may have met her death. And now, pray excuse me, gentlemen, if I rise and leave you. I have breakfasted most excellently and must set about my vulgar duties with my inferior superiors at Scotland Yard. I also have a cold, Lieutenant Wentworth. Good day.
Well, well, Mr. Cheviot, come in, come in. Splendid, my dear fellow, simply splendid.
Your servant, Colonel Round. Mr. Mayne, morning, Henley. Oh, and this other gentleman?
Oh, Mr. Cheviot, may I have the honor of making you known to Mr. Robert Peel, the Home Secretary?
Sir Roberts.
Come, Mr. Cheviot, I've hardly succeeded to the baronetcy quite yet.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. I'm very pleased to make your acquaintance.
And I to make yours, Mr. Cheviot. You won me over, sir.
Hmm?
You got it.
Got it, Mr. Peel?
The position man, superintendent of the Home Division.
Mr. Peel has been much impressed by your report, Cheviot.
Best report I ever read. They send you out on water. Theft of bird seed. And you prove like that it was a jewel robbery. There's only one thing missing in this report of yours. Now, we were talking about it before you came in. Amen?
Indeed, sir. And it seemed to us quite paramount, Mr. Cheviot.
Well, Mr. Peel?
Who killed this woman, Margaret Renfrew? Eh? And how the devil was it done? Eh?
I'm sorry, sir. I'm afraid I can't yet tell you.
Tush, tush, Mr. Cheviot, when you know all else.
I must beg you to believe, Mr. Peel, that if I had known the answer to that problem, it would have appeared on my report. Have you seen my sketch plan of the upstairs passage where the crime was committed?
Of course I have. I even know the place myself from my visits to the old lady.
Very well then, sir. And you must know from my transcription of what the surgeon told me that the bullet which killed Miss Margaret Renfrew was fired in a dead straight line. This very bullet here, Colonel Ryan, which I now hand to you as evidence.
Deuce!
Well, sir, you mean, I suppose, that the pistol couldn't have been fired from either the ballroom or the bedroom that the woman came out of.
Precisely. Leaving, surely, only one alternative.
Well, what's this? Don't tell me that you've solved it yourself, Mayne.
Perhaps I would hardly go so far as to claim that, sir. At least it's plain that the bullet was fired in that dead straight line that Mr. Cheviot mentioned. In other words, from somewhere very near the place where you and Henley were standing, Cheviot. You allow it?
Apparently, yes.
We must grant that neither you nor Henley is guilty. You'd have seen each other.
And we'd have heard the shot if it was so close to us, Mr. Mayne, if you'll forgive me.
But surely the music, eh?
I beg your pardon, Colonel. There was also the question of no smoke, nor any smell of powder. And in any case, no possible weapon of this century could have exploded at such close quarters without our hearing it against a small string orchestra. Silencers have hardly yet been invented.
Confounded, sir. What other century are we talking about with this work? And what in glory is a silencer?
I'm sorry, Sir Robert.
And don't call me Sir Robert, confound you. Have you second sight or something?
I wish to heaven I had, sir. I even ought to have. There is only one thing that I can presume to tell you.
Well?
Well? Who the murderer is.
Mr. Cheviot.
Be silent, Henley.
What do you mean, Cheviot? Who, then?
As I have suggested in my report, sir. Margaret Renfrew's secret lover.
Tush, of course you've said it in a report, but what's his name, man?
I can only give you a description, Mr. Peel, from the evidence assembled. He is a man of good presence and physically attractive to women. Possibly rather older than she was. Although it may only have been a blind when she told me that she preferred such men.
Like yourself, for instance, Cheviot?
I beg your pardon, Mr. Mayne. Pray let me continue. Margaret Renfrew was a woman of some passion, Mr. Peel. Although outwardly cold and imperious. She was proud. She raged constantly against her position as a poor relation. Although she attempted not to show it.
So then?
When a woman like that falls in love, she is apt to explode like a cannon. According to Lady Cork, she does fall in love. Although she tries to hide it. She is so passionately in love, or in lust, if you prefer the term, that she lies for this unknown man she has met. She steals jewels for him, so that he can pledge them to gamble at Vulcan's. And so that is one more thing we know about him, sir, that he is a heavy gambler.
Well, at least you reason well again, Cheviot. A gambler, eh?
And again, like Mr. Cheviot himself, perhaps, as we know from our report on him.
What precisely do you mean, Mr. Mayne?
Among the many motives for murder, there is, surely, jealousy. And if we return to the crime itself, gentlemen, we find that there was someone else in the fatal corridor besides Henley and Mr. Cheviot, and standing directly behind Miss Renfrew.
Lady Drake.
Precisely. Mr. Cheviot, why are you shielding her?
In heaven's name, sir!
Answer my question, Mr. Cheviot. It's apparent in every hidden line of this famous report of yours. You mention her as little as possible, although she was present throughout. And there is one thing else, sir. Lady Drayton was wearing a muff last night, and you must know as well as I that in this century, Mr. Cheviot, ladies are accustomed to defend themselves in our troubled streets by carrying a pocket pistol in a muff.
Come now, Maine, confounded. I know Flora Drayton well. I know her husband. She'd surely never do a thing like that.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Maine, it is a pity if our association should be in danger of beginning in a quarrel.
Oh, my dear fellow, nothing could be further from my wishes. I admit that I have no fragment of evidence. I merely wish to point out that the task of crime detection is perhaps rather more complex than you had blithely supposed.
I am well aware of its complexities, Mr. Maine, very well. And there is plainly only one way by which a real quarrel between us can be avoided.
What do you mean, Cheviot?
By bringing before you in this very room, and within 48 hours, the true murderer of Margaret Renfrew. Colonel Rowan, have you two officers in your force who are above the usual in intelligence?
Eh? Oh, well, there's Sergeant Bulmer, of course, an old Seagrave, maybe.
With your permission, I shall spend the rest of the day with them. And some others from the rank and file who'll obey close orders. And tonight, I shall visit the one place in London where evidence can perhaps be found, Mr. Maine. Real evidence.
And that is, Mr. Cheviot?
Vulcan's gaming house in St. James's. And even confront the great Vulcan himself, no doubt. Glass eye and all. Your servant, Sir Robert.
Mr. Cheviot, my dear Mr. Cheviot, your eternal son,
Mr. Vulcan?
But of course you will have your jest, Mr. Cheviot. You speak as though we never met.
Perhaps we haven't, my friend, on the present footing at least. To tell the truth, I've been rather hoping that we might encounter tonight, Vulcan.
And why not pray when it is my devoted custom to perambulate my humble rooms and welcome my more distinguished guests in person? When I saw you among them, Mr. Cheviot, what else should I do but rush to greet you?
Oh, it is hardly a rush. Surely I've been here for some time.
Ah, then you must blame this unfortunate eye of mine, my good Mr. Cheviot. I have this moment spotted you, as the vulgar would say.
As the vulgar has just said, my good Mr. Vulcan. And I have reason to believe that you knew very well that I might visit you tonight, and even in what capacity.
May I inquire what you may mean?
Simply that your rooms here seem curiously full of blacklegs.
Oh, come, Mr. Cheviot, how one abhors such crude vernacular expression.
Your paid hirelings, then, brought in from every filthy alleyway in London to protect you in the event of any trouble, and to help you dupe the poor devils who come to the great Vulcans in the hope of some honest play.
Dupe, Mr. Cheviot?
I had a most interesting and instructive time of it, Vulcan, until you condescended to spot me. I played quite considerably at your roulette table there, and twice was clumsy enough as to drop my counters on the floor. They fell close to the croupier's foot.
Indeed, sir. Shall we go elsewhere, perhaps? Somewhere quieter, where we might talk?
It would suit me admirably. I have, as it happens, a proposition to put to you.
My private chambers are at the top of those stairs and along the gallery. After you, Mr. Chen.
Thank you. Incidentally, Vulcan, as a matter of curiosity, how did you get your name? It isn't your own, I take it.
Oh, shall we say it has become so through usage, Mr. Cheviot. In its origins as a sobriquet, it derives from mythology.
Indeed.
You may recollect that the first king of the underworld, the first Vulcan, was married to Venus, the goddess of love and beauty. One day he found her in a somewhat embarrassing position with young Mars, the god of war.
Well?
I was roughly in the same impasse at one time in my career. I also had a goddess of love and beauty. I've indeed had several. They're a weakness of mine. It's curious, is it not, how some men seem to have a strange power over women, even men with such a few natural advantages as I.
I think I know one.
Do you? Mm-hmm. However, to return to my tale, the Mars in my case was a young army officer. It gave me some pleasure and earned me my nickname to throw him out of the bedroom window, two stories up, glass and all. Will you walk into my parlour, Mr. Cheviot?
Thank you, Mr. Fly.
And now, sir, what do you want of me?
The name of a murderer. Huh? The murderer of Margaret Renfrew, who stole jewels for him from Lady Cork. At least one of which, a ruby brooch in the shape of a ship, is known to have been pledged here.
My dear sir, it distresses a gentleman to say so, but I have a fully legal pawnbroker's license.
And therefore keep records of your transactions in those ledgers on the desk there, perhaps, and the jewels themselves in that wall safe?
Well, if so.
I told you that I wanted his name, Vulcan.
In exchange for what, Mr. Cheviot?
You know as well as I that your gaming rooms out there are illegal. Do you never fear a raid from the new police?
Sure, a new police. What raid? The moment one was planned, I'd know it.
So I can well concede.
The instant they were on their way, the iron door down there would be closed. 4 inches of iron, Mr. Cheviot. And by the time they broke through, there would not be one single trace of gambling in these old premises.
Not even under the floor?
What do you mean?
My final card, Vulcan, or almost my final card. Enough to turn your noble patrons against you as well as the police. Your roulette tables are rigged.
Rigged?
The mechanism is very simple. The croupier's right foot controls a series of small buttons under the carpet. I saw him operate them when I dropped my counters. A very slight pressure sets in motion a group of coiled springs controlled by compressed air. The wheel is tilted, oh, so delicately, not even remotely noticeable. But the ball falls just where the croupier wants it to fall.
By heaven, Mr.
Wait, Vulcan. There's more. You may have fortified your front door down there, but like many another householder, you've forgotten the back one.
What?
Your impregnable private office, Vulcan, with a window there that looks out over 2 sloping rooftops. I studied it well as I came for a stroll in this direction earlier this evening. Oh. And at this very moment, waiting for my signal, there are 2 stout sergeants of the Metropolitan Police on those rooftops and 12 eager constables.
You damnable peeler, you'll never reach that window. I'm bigger than you are and stronger.
I don't doubt it. But you may not in your day and age have heard of judo, my good Vulcan. Will you come on, sir?
That's large for me.
Bulma! Seedling!
Already in, waitress.
Glory be! What in the name of the great Harry have you done to old Vulcan there?
With any luck, I've only knocked him unconscious. I don't want to have broken his neck entirely. One of you fellows had better look to him.
Oh, you're a man and a half, you are, Mr. Cheviot. It is a pleasure to have you on the force. What's the plan, sir?
I want those ledgers and the jewels in that wall safe. Give me your Jenny Seagrave.
Right here, sir.
And then we're outside there, men. And we smash Vulcan's gaming house. To atomies!
And that's no more than a handful. And all the blazing blacklegs he'll have waiting for us.
The minute we're out, I'm going to tear up the roulette table and show those Piccadilly yokels how they've been tricked for years. They'll be with us to a man against all the blacklegs in the world. Come on, men. Let's get it over with quickly. I have an appointment with a lady. Come on!
Oh, follow me, Harry.
Right behind me.
Jack.
Will you forgive me, Flora?
No, my love. It's I to be forgiven. I didn't mean a word of it. I've been so miserable waiting for you all day and all night. Why didn't you come?
To tell the truth, my dear, I'd forgotten where you lived.
Oh, Jack. And besides, I dare say there was your famous duty.
Yes, my duty.
If I'm honest, my dear, there's so much that I don't understand. Since last night when I saw you at Scotland Yard, when you'd struck your head in your hackney. Sometimes you might almost be a man from another world, Jack. That was why I was so wild at Maria Cork's. You frightened me and I ran away. And I've spent the whole wretched day reading foolish books with only half my mind on them. Jack, you never did think that I killed Peg Renfrew, did you?
Never. Never, Flora. There was a moment's panic when I saw you with a pistol. But I knew in my heart you hadn't. And now I can almost prove you didn't, no matter what anyone may say.
Do you fear what anyone may say?
Yes, I do.
But Jack, you said that you could prove...
I said that I could almost prove, because I know who did kill Margaret Renfrew.
Jack!
I think I almost guessed it last night without knowing I had. I certainly knew it this morning, and tonight I found confirmation.
Ooh.
What I do not know is how, Flora. And yet I had a glimmer of that too tonight. But it's not possible. It's not possible. It's out of the wrong time.
Time? Oh, Jack, my darling, what is it? Why do you stand there in the shadows? Come forward to the light.
No, Flora, please.
You must, Jack. You frighten me again. You look so strange, as if...
Fire burn and cauldron bubble. We said it once of someone else. But if Edward Keane had looked at me, perhaps... Very well, Flora. There.
Jack, you're hurt. There's blood on your cheek. Clothes are torn.
It was the only reason I didn't come into the light before. It's nothing, Flora, nothing at all. It's only a scratch.
But when one of Vulcan's blacklegs did manage to fetch me that one blow...
Blacklegs? Jack, you were
it
fighting.
It was as if things had almost slipped back for a moment. And I realized...
You must let me bathe in my love. I'll ring Miriam for warm water.
No, please, Flora. I swear it's nothing. Come and sit with me for a minute. Give me your hand. There's something I must say. Flora, long ago in some book, I read an account of an impossible crime. A woman was shot in a broad corridor of fringed lamps. She died before the eyes of three witnesses.
But this was last night, Jack. Margaret
no,
Renfrew...
Wait, my dear, wait. In the account I read, no names were given, and there was no mention of any solution, but it seems that, for a time at least, and in official quarters, there was grave suspicion of one of those witnesses, the woman.
Jack.
And yet, the more I read, the more I felt somehow that I knew that corridor, and that in some way I could solve that mystery and save the woman from her danger if I could somehow bridge the time.
Why do you talk of time? You've said it twice.
Listen, my love. It's long past midnight, October the 31st, 1829. All Hallows' Eve. And there is witchcraft in it somewhere. Real witchcraft. You said a moment ago that I seemed like a man out of another world. And perhaps that was truer than you knew. Perhaps at some hour soon, and even in some hour of victory...
Jack! Someone at this time!
Are you expecting anyone?
Nobody, nobody. I'll have them sent away. There must be nothing to take you from me tonight, Jack.
No. No, not tonight, my dear. Not yet. It was why I came. Whoever it is...
Beg pardon, ma'am. My lady called...
Pardon me, Waygill. To the deuce of the formalities this time of the morning.
Mariah!
Aye, so it is, Flo Drayton. Out of my bed at this hour, huh? But I've been a-dining with me old acquaintance John Wilson Crocker and a parcel of other red-behinded Tories, and I heard some gossip there. How do you do, George Cheviot's son?
Your servant, Lady Cole.
Ah, as but I hope you are. I guess I'd find you here. It was why I came, to lick your wounds, eh?
I beg your pardon, ma'am.
Nonsense, of course you don't. Stop standing fiddling at the table with that deuce book, whatever it is, and tell me the truth. Did you get them, boy?
Mariah, I don't understand.
No, more do I yet, but the gossip I did hear was Superintendent George Cheviot's son with a pack of feelers bobbed up like a flash of magic at Vulcan's tonight. Well, my lad.
Madam, I confess. You're well informed, and rapidly for this day and age.
Jack, the fight!
Never mind the fight, Gil. Though I'm told it was a fine one enough, with every gambler in the place joining in with the peelers against Vulcan's mob. The point is, did you get it? George Cheviot's son.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, my brooch, eh? Like the ship.
The others, too, my lady. In my kerchief here. Do you recognize them?
Heaven bless you, boy. It was a gift, you see. First I had. Can I take it?
Will you tell me something? If I was right about Miss Renfrew stealing them.
Aye. You were. I never wanted to say it, but it can do no harm now. I saw her. I even saw her, those poor cages of mine, in the middle of the night once.
And yet you wouldn't accuse her.
Damn me, it wasn't for herself, boy. The girl was bewitched by that man of hers, whoever he is. That's why she did it. I reckon that if I wrote to Charlie Rowan about the bird seed, it'd frighten her, bring her back to her senses. Never counted on you coming in and stop fiddling with that book, I say.
Madam, I will require you to make an official statement of what you just told me. If you... Flora! This book!
The book?
What is it? What in heaven's name is it doing here?
It's only something I was reading, some horrid account of some crime. I laid it open at that place when you came
in. I should have known. Oh, I should have known. The murder of William Weir, London, 1824. The final link.
What the devil are you talking about?
I told them 8:40. I told Peel himself, and I'll do it in almost half. One more task, Flora. Only one.
Jack.
No, never fear, my love. Not tonight. Not till 9 o'clock tomorrow morning in Manton's Gallery in Davis Street. And after that, the truth. But till then, I'm yours. And I call on Lady Cork. Two witnesses.
Oh, it's blood. Oh, what next? At my age. Oh.
Well, Manton, did you get my note?
Everything ready for you, Mr. Cheviot. Pistols on the firing shelf there, targets on the wall. Six pistols each, six targets each. Bullseyes on wafers at 36 pace.
Excellent. It was good fortune that I'd read about this famous shooting gallery and gun shop of your father's, Manton.
I only read about it, Mr. Cheviot. You're one of our best regulars.
Of course. No sound of my opponent and the others, Wentworth and Debbitt?
No, not yet, sir, but it's barely quite nine. Would you care for some refreshment while you wait?
Thank you, no. Manton, look here. This book.
Mm-hmm.
The Murder of William Weir. This passage in it.
Yes, sir.
Read that. Those few lines there. Well?
Well, what, Mr. Cheviot? Plain enough, I'd say.
But the weapon. The weapon, ma'am. I was stupid enough to think it hadn't been invented.
Not invented? Bless you, Mr. Cheviot. We've had one in the shop for years and years. Well, you can see it in the window now, through the arch there. In the corner, do you see? Look exactly like a...
Oh, wait, the others.
Oh, good. Morning, Jack. Gad, you're up bright and early.
Only eager to get it over, Freddy. I've much to do today. Good morning, Wentworth.
Morning.
Well, Hogben?
Well yourself, fellow. Have you your thousand ready?
You'll have them if you earn them. You'll see that Manton has everything prepared, Lieutenant. Six bulls apiece at shoulder level. Shall we toss a coin for the first chance?
Damme, you're in a hurry, aren't you?
I've already said that I have much to do today, Captain Hogben.
Such as making your will, eh? We've still to meet in the field, even after I've beaten you here, remember.
Please, Hogben. Have you a coin, Mr. Debbitt?
Already? Right. What do you call, Captain?
Head. It's tails. What's your will, Mr. Cheviot?
Let him shoot first.
Stand back, Manson. Give a man space. Now, fellow.
Two bulls, three near misses, third shot a complete miss. First class shooting, Hogben.
Beat that fellow, if you can.
Your servant, Captain Hogben.
By that bull! By gad, sir.
Manton, I'd be obliged if you'd let me have one of those flattened balls from the floor there as a souvenir.
Mr. Cheviot, I've never seen such shooting in my life, sir. Captain Hogben has asked me to state that as the original challenger, he has chosen the time of your meeting for 5 o'clock this afternoon by the imitation Greek temple near Vauxhall Gardens. Mr. Debbitt knows the place. But in the meantime, under the terms of your wager, Captain Hogben has to give you certain information about Miss Margaret Renfrew.
I'm damned if I will.
What? In heaven's name, Hogben.
I said I'm damned if I will, Wentworth. Ain't that clear enough?
But your word as an officer.
No officer need keep his word to a filthy peeler. The only further business that I have with Cheviot is to shoot him dead at 5 o'clock. And I'm deuced if I don't wear gloves on my pistol hand even then. Good day. And to the devil with all of you. Whatted, by Jove.
Mr. Cheviot, my humblest apologies.
You're very good, Lieutenant, but as it happens, the information is no longer necessary to me. This merely means that I am more eager than ever to meet that insolent young scoundrel on the field.
If I were you, sir, I would forego that meeting.
What? Oh, confound
it, Debbitt. After Hogben's recent conduct, Mr. Cheviot, I consider myself absolved from any trust he may have put in me. The fellow never did play fair, and he won't now.
Meaning, Lieutenant?
That he has no intention of attending the meeting himself, and that he chose the site at such a distance so as to have you out of the way while he seeks to destroy you in some other manner.
Indeed. What other manner?
Just before 5 o'clock this afternoon, Captain Hogben intends to visit Scotland Yard to see Mr. Main and Colonel Rowan.
Oh.
I believe that he has even arranged for Mr. Peel himself to be present. He intends to swear an affidavit that on the night of Miss Margaret Renfrew's murder, he saw Lady Drayton fire a shot and conceal the pistol in her hand muff, and you thereafter take it from her.
The door of the ballroom. The open door.
I know nothing of the details, sir. These only are the facts.
Very well. Very well, Captain Hogben. At 5 o'clock this afternoon, eh? We'll see.
fire burn and cauldron bubble.
So, then, Captain Hogben, you are fully prepared to sign this statement that you have made, and of which two fair copies are now prepared by our clerk?
I am.
You must be very sure, Captain. Both Colonel Ryan and I are magistrates, and this is a deposition under oath.
Confound it, Maine. I said so, didn't I? I tell you, I saw her shoot.
I don't like it. I don't like it at all, Maine. Not Flora Drayton.
We none of us like it, Mr. Peel. Least of all, Mr. Cheviot's suppression of vital evidence. But I did hint yesterday...
Excuse me, Mr. Maine, but and this passage here about Mr. Cheviot taking the pistol, sir...
Well, Henley?
After all, I was there myself, sir. Surely I'd have seen it.
When your back was turned, fellow, why do you think Cheviot sent you to shut the ballroom door? Hmm? Damn it, I'd barely time to get away from the crack before you did shut it. But all the same, I saw it all, I tell you. That woman killed Peg Renfrew.
Go on with your writing, Henley.
Yes, sir.
Yesterday, Mr. Peel, I may only have been making the wildest of guesses, but today, with this new evidence, every one has been confirmed.
And today you are still wrong, Mr. Maine.
Dead, Cheviot.
As always at your service, gentlemen, and accompanied, you perceive, by the innocent cause of this distinguished gathering.
Lady Drayton.
Mr. Peel. No, pray be seated, gentlemen.
Confound you, Cheviot, I thought...
You thought you had me safely disposed of. While you made your damnable accusations, while you tried to hurt me in the one way you knew would most affect me. Have you made them?
Very well. I have, damn you. And I'll repeat them now that you're here. That woman is the murderess.
Mr. Cheviot,
wait, Henley, your turn to speak will come. Sergeant Bulmer, Seagrave.
Present, sir.
You can come in and close the door, Sergeant. Are you armed?
Yes, sir.
Hold your pistol in readiness. You too, Seagrave.
Yes,
it may
sir.
Be required.
Mr. Cheviot. I hardly know the meaning of these high-minded actions of yours in my office, but a serious accusation has been made...
Which I repeat is false. Captain Hogben is perjured.
By the law!
Be silent, Hogben! You have just accused Lady Drayton and Mr. Cheviot of a conspiracy to do murder. Pending further notice, Mr. Cheviot is still the superintendent of this division of my police force. He is entitled to be heard.
Thank you, Mr. Peel.
Do you seriously deny, Cheviot, that Lady Drayton had a pistol in her muff that night?
No, sir. Only that she fired it. And as to the pistol itself, here it is, exactly as it was fired.
The deuce!
Colonel Ryan, you already have the bullet which was taken from Margaret Renfrew's heart. Will you pass it to Mr. Maine, so that he may try to fit it into the muzzle of that pistol, as I have tried myself a dozen times.
Jack!
Shh, quiet. Quiet, my love. Well, Mr. Maine.
This won't do. The bullet's much too large.
Thank you.
Confound it, let me see. Push him over, Henley.
Yes, sir.
Once again, I appear to be rather hasty, Mr. Cheviot. Mark you, this doesn't in any way lessen the charge against you of suppressing evidence.
The evidence was temporarily withheld, only because it would have obscured the truth, sir. As it has now. Well, Colonel Round?
The thing's impossible. Not only was this bullet never fired from Lady Drayton's pistol, it was never fired from any weapon at all.
Oh, yes, it was.
Mr. Cheviot, I think I know something of firearms. This bullet is clear and smooth, unblackened by powder burns. Any bullet fired from any pistol is crusted black with powder grains in the soft lead before it leaves the muzzle.
I have one here in my hand as proof of that, Colonel. Fired in Manson's gallery this very morning. Burnt black, do you see, on the unflattened side. But it is not so with every weapon.
You mean?
Permit me, gentlemen, to draw your attention to some passages in this book which confirm certain ideas I've formed after seeing the pneumatic cylinders concealed in Vulcan's roulette tables. It is called, you perceive, The Murder of William Weir, published here in London in 1824, 5 years ago, or just over 130. A rogue called Thurtle, after killing this man, William Weir, had to kill another man named Wood by shooting him through the heart. And I quote, gentlemen, by shooting him through the heart... with an air gun.
An air gun?
Oh, I was the one who thought they hadn't been invented, Mr. Peel. But listen again. This is what an air gun of your period looked like, and I still quote, listen. The air gun resembled a knotted walking stick.
What?
A knotted walking stick. It was let off by merely pressing one of the knots with a finger, and the only noise was a slight whiz, scarcely perceptible to anyone who might be on the spot. There was no smoke, no smell of powder, gentlemen. And that slight whiz was drowned by the dance music. The shot was fired in a direct line. With my own eyes, I saw the murderer lift the weapon to destroy his mistress when I thought he meant only to point at her. And Lady Drayton heard the whistle of the bullet past her arm. The murderer, gentlemen,
is your own chief clerk, Mr. Alan Henley.
Boy,
hold him! Oh, yes, gentlemen. And you've seen that black stick of his 1,000 times. You must have noticed, as I did the first time I met him, that Mr. Henley has much virile charm for all his lack of natural advantages, like Vulcan, whom as a type he closely resembles, and who even boasted of his conquests.
But good Lord, Chevy, do you mean that this Renfrew woman would pick up with a fellow like that? A clerk? Maria Cork's companion?
She was a woman of passion, sir. We all know that. And yet there was a curious repulsiveness in her. Everyone who met her noticed it. Where else would she find gratification but in such an older man with experience? As she once even said herself.
Damn you, Mr. Chevy!
Damn you, Henley! As you will be damned. Very well, he shot her. Because she still had her pride. In her heart, when the lust died, she despised herself for this relationship with a man so far beneath her. She'd stolen for him. Lady Cork is willing to testify that she actually saw her do it. The jewels went to his friend Vulcan. And if you need proof of that, you'll find his name against every article in question in Vulcan's ledgers. And she stole something else for him, too, heaven forgive him.
What?
That pistol of Lady Drayton's. He knew he had to kill his mistress someday. He was afraid that her pride would make her confess everything. Even if he did it with an air gun, he would need a dummy weapon and a suspect. It was Margaret Renfrew who borrowed that pistol, ostensibly for Lady Cork, but in reality for Henley. On the night of the ball, he knew that discovery might be near. Recollect that he reached the house before I did. He had a chance of a word with Margaret Renfrew. Perhaps she told him she could bear it no longer, and that she was going to confess. He had time to discharge that pistol in secret somewhere, perhaps in the garden, and then hide it in the corridor where Lady Drayton later found it and picked it up. And then he came down, all smiles, to greet us both.
And would Renfrew have confessed?
I'm certain of it. I saw it in her face that night. If you had seen the way she looked at him, as he took the notes in shorthand, the man she had loved once and whom she now despised, she was on the very point. And he knew it. He heard me say that I wanted another word with her, and he killed her in the nick of time before my very eyes.
It's damnable. The whole thing's damnable.
The man you trusted, gentlemen, and look at him there, with not a word of denial. The man who gave all your secrets to his friend Vulcan, apart from all else. To such an extent that Vulcan never feared a raid and even knew of my visit last night and was prepared with his blacklegs because Henley had warned him. Very well, gentlemen, I've cleared Lady Drayton's name and I've found you your murderer within my 48 hours. But there is still one further account to be settled, not with Henley this time. He'll suffer enough. I mean, with that man there, Captain Hogben. He has sworn and is perjured. It was done in malice aforethought before a magistrate. And the penalty for that in this day and age...
Wait. By the Lord, Cheviot, I've had enough from you. I said I'd put a bullet in you tonight, and so I will. All Hallows Eve.
Look out, sir, he's got a gun.
To the devil with you, John Cheviot.
Jack! Jack! Oh, my darling! Jack! Jack! Jack!
Mr. Cheviot. Huh? Mr. Cheviot, sir. Mr. Cheviot. It's me, sir. Sergeant Boyce, night duty room at the yard, sir.
Boyce. Boyce? My head. My head.
There we are, sir. That's better now. You had a nasty knock, sir. The taxi driver skidded.
An hour and a blazes, could I help that, eh? Blasted foggy night like this.
Boyce, I didn't dream it. I swear I didn't.
No, of course you didn't, Mr. Cheviot. You're all right now, eh? Just a knock. By the way, your wife phoned half an hour ago. Said she'd come to pick you up and take you home in the car. She's inside now, waiting. Better not say anything to frighten her about the knock, eh?
I didn't dream it, Boyce. I know I didn't. I solved the murder. And Bulmer shot Hogben. I saw him after Hogben shot me, just before the blackness came.
Now listen,
no, look,
Stephen,
look. Here's evidence. This bullet in my hand from Manton's gallery. I said I'd keep it as a souvenir. It's still in my hand, boys. Look, look.
Yes, so I see, sir. Little bit of lead, eh? All flattened, kind of. Where did you pick that up,
If only she... If only she...
Quiet, sir. Here's Mrs. Cheviot now. Don't frighten.
Hello, darling.
Flora.
word to the curious. In the story of Fire Burn, all the places actually existed. Mr. Main and Colonel Round were real people, as also, of course, were Lady Cork and Mr. Peel, later Sir Robert. Even the odd Mr. Vulcan kept his crooked gaming house in St. James's. But above all, Mr. Henley's air gun existed. The book quoted by Superintendent Cheviot was indeed published in 1824. Such weapons, in fact, taking up to as many as 16 charges in one loading, were known long before that. One was almost certainly used in an attempt to assassinate King George IV in the year 1820. Fire burn and cauldron bubble. Good night.
That was Gladys Young as Lady Cork, Richard Handel as Superintendent John Cheviot, and June Tobin as Flora Drayton, in a new production of Fire Burn, a play by John Keir Cross from the novel by John Dixon Carr, with Norman Shelley as Vulcan and Austin Trevor as the presenter, David March as Captain Hogben, John Ruddock as Colonel Rowan, James Thomason as Mr. Richard Main, John Graham as Mr. Alan Henley, Gudrun Ewer as Margaret Renfrew, Norman Claridge as Mr. Robert Peel, Charles Hodgson as Freddie Debbitt, Michael Deacon as Lieutenant Wentworth, John Baddeley as Manton and Sergeant Boyce, Timothy West as Sergeant Bulmer. Other parts played by Joe Manning Wilson and Andrew Sachs. The play, which was recorded, was produced by Audrey Cameron.